Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Aaron Schwartz of Passport coming to us from San Francisco. How's it going, Aaron?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Did you take your kids out trick-or-treating last night?
We did a little bit. She didn't get as much candy as I wanted, but it's all right. I guess I'll go to the store and buy my own. It's just less fun than stealing from my child.
But. You can have some of ours. We have. Which street do you go to?
So we live in Glen Park, so normally we do that. But this year we went to a spot called Fair Oaks, which is in the Mission District, and turns into just a hell of a party starting at like 6 o'clock, but we've got very tiny kids, so we leave by 6 o'clock. It's incredible. Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. We went to Avila, which is in the Marina, and they shut down the whole street, and it's sure. A good time.
That's great.
But my wife, very cleverly, I'd never thought of this. I don't know if she invented it or heard it somewhere. She offered the kids Switch-Witch. And so Switch-Witch, you can give away all your candy and the Switch-Witch will give you a toy or some
that's
money.
That's awesome.
And they opted for the Switch-Witch and they got $5. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And our 2.5-year-old had candy for the first time yesterday. And she's like, I like candy.
I like candy.
I kept repeating that. It was pretty good. So,
yeah. Awesome. All right. Good stuff. So what is Passport? What do you guys do?
Yeah. So we're an international shipping company. We help brands with products based in the US going abroad. So 100% of the shipments that we do are US outbound. It was a problem that I felt with my previous company. We work with digitally native vertical brands, some older line brands, and we're basically a competitor to DHL and FedEx. They don't know about us. They don't really care about us, right? By the time they do, we'll be able to work closely with them. So the idea is to marry the great logistics, like actually physically moving parcels from here to 200 countries around the world, but giving a more modern tech experience and a much better customer experience. Because if anybody shipped internationally, you know, it's really painful on the CX side.
Interesting. Yeah, that's great. So who's doing the actual delivery then?
So we're asset light. We're not like two guys at the truck or anything like that. We find the right partners in the right countries. And the really hard thing with shipping is the last mile, right? Like who's actually dropping it off? That's where most of the cost is because you take this like big pallet of packages and then you send it out, right, to all these different houses or buildings or whatever. And it's also where a lot of the loss rates are. So what you really care about is who's doing that last mile. And then for a brand or like the head of operations for a t-shirt brand or a deodorant brand or whatever, like there's no way for you to know who the right partner is in every country. So that's our job. And then we get to be that one throat to choke and like that one unified experience kind of over the top of everybody out there.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
So to launch this, did you have to go strike all these relationships with last mile and other, you know, carriers in advance of launching? I guess you would have to, right?
No, it's a really good question. So my background, I ran a consumer brand for a little bit more than 7 years. And my co-founder, Alex, actually ran a shipping company for a couple of years. And between the two of us, we actually knew a lot of different industry players. We don't have personal relationships in 200 countries. But for the places where we don't have a direct relationship, we know we have a partner who are basically a reseller. So it's like there's an awesome logistics person who's figured out the right suite of partners. And it's just more seamless for us to go work with them. They're great at what they do. We don't mind taking a smaller margin and giving them room in exchange for a better experience for our brands.
Interesting. Yeah. Cool.
Over time, yeah, we you know, when it makes sense, we'll have relationships everywhere. But for now, it's not necessary.
Awesome. When did you guys get started? How long have you been around?
Yeah, so about a year, actually. So this is, what, October of 2018. So yeah, Alex and I, we co-founded the company in October of 2017. He'd been noodling on the idea before that for probably 6 months.
So that was sort of my next question is where'd you guys come up with the idea? I guess you've already elaborated on that, but maybe any more on the backstory or genesis of this?
So we both took our previous companies through an accelerator program called NFX for like network effects. And that's now a venture fund. It's a pretty awesome fund based in San Francisco and I think also in Israel. And Alex's previous company is still going and going very strong. It's a business called Lynx, L-Y-N-K-S, and it helps folks abroad buy products from the U.S. They ended up specializing in the Middle East, which is just a very difficult place to ship to because not all the like nationalized posts are the right partners that you would want to use. There might be some loss, too high of loss rates, right, for among other issues. And so what they did is they actually like their business was shipping. And so they built like kind of custom routes from the US into Dubai or into Cairo. And initially when they started the company, and this is a really cool insight from Alex, they used DHL. And DHL is an awesome company, right? Like logistics business founded in like late 1960s. And you know, you don't get to be that scale if you're not great at what you do. But eventually he realized that DHL in the Middle East wasn't really DHL. They were Aramex. So they would partner with this company. And then Aramex wasn't doing the door-to-door. Aramex would partner with Fetcher or some last mile delivery company, right? Kind of like an Uber Rush or a Postmates or Axle Hire or Shipsy or all the things that are happening in the US. And so the big insight, which is so obvious once you take a step back, is that no company, no matter how big enough to have a plane and a truck in every city in every country. So everybody, even like the big legacy carriers, are also a network of partners or franchisees or, you know, however you want to think about it. And so we kind of took a step back and realized, oh, we can do this globally and just be asset light. And when you're asset light, what that means is you get to figure out who the right partner is everywhere. And when a better partner pops up, like if drones become the right delivery choice in Beijing, like we would just use a drone delivery partner, right? Obviously getting years ahead of where we are today. But the idea is like, how do you, you know, it's like a flight to quality, for lack of a better term.
Interesting. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you guys can just focus on the user experience and the front end interface and all that. That's good right. stuff.
And the customer experience too. So we like, international is really interesting because like if you assume you don't do an express shipment, which if you're shipping a t-shirt abroad, you don't need it the next day, right? It's not like people are buying most international products urgently. Yeah. So if you tell a customer, hey, it's going to be there in 8 days, by day five, they might get antsy if the digital experience is a little bit janky. And so they'll say, hey, where the hell is my package?
Yeah.
And the reality is like right now that's a negative impact on a brand, right? Because like the person might tweet, hey, thanks so much, brand X. Like my package isn't here yet. And the reality is like it shouldn't be there yet. The brand communicated wouldn't be there yet, but the customer still has anxiety. And so there are two things you can do. One is like that digital experience. So just surface information in a cleaner way for a brand or for the consumer. And then the second is like when the person messages it, right, where the hell is my package, is we actually intercept those. So the brand is going to have to deal with it and then talk to us. And like that costs a brand a couple of bucks on customer support. And so the idea is like you guys should not have to even take that cost because you don't have that information anyways. So we intercept it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm kind of amazed on shipping. So this is a little bit of a tangent, but
please,
it's my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. And what we're going to do, the four of us kids are going to recreate their wedding from 50 years ago.
Okay.
And they wore, my dad and his groomsmen wore Nehru jackets. And my mom wore these like almost like a Chinese satin gowns. And cool. So we're ordering these things to surprise them and ordering them on eBay, right? Where do you get a Nehru jacket?
Yeah.
And it's coming to me in this package from India. And then another part comes from China. And it's like direct shipping to me. And I'm just amazed that I can just order something and it is cut to fit from India in a week or two. It's crazy.
Yeah. When I started my career in New York, there was a guy who's Indian, but he was based in Hong Kong, who used to come to New York and like, I think it still exists. It was like Maxwell's Tailors and you'd get fit in like a Sheraton hotel room and it'd be like a line of guys because it was all like men's shirts and men's suits. And then like 6 weeks later, you get all these perfectly cut everything, you know? So like that was my first kind of interaction with like the globalization of how goods move. But today it's just crazy how everything works. It's a really cool space. It's fun. It's kind of nerdy, but it's pretty fun.
Kind of nerdy.
Yeah.
And if something goes wrong, if a shipment is missing or falls off the back of the truck, I guess, do you guys pass that problem along to you? I mean, we're getting into a little bit nitty gritty, but
No, it's a good question. Like the philosophy behind the company is like, what is a 70 NPS shipping company like? And so like NPS net promoter score, meaning like, would people say, I would love to recommend Passport to my friends, or I'd recommend Passport if I moved to a new company and had to make a shipping decision. And so it's like, if you're at a 70, you're just an incredible brand and like it's aspirational. And the idea is like if Canada Post has like rotating strikes right now, so shipments are slower than what we told our customers, the answer isn't pass the buck to Canada Post. The answer is we're so sorry, like we're going to try and find some other solution right now, and if we can't, like we'll give small rebates and just say like this is our fault, right? And kind of take that accountability and really focus on how do you delight a customer. So if a package falls off a truck or it's broken, like we're accountable for it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
You're choosing us as a partner is basically the way it goes. And like, you don't want a partner who's like, well, it's not really our fault. It's kind of, you know, this other guy's fault.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, cool. Yeah. So let's talk about fundraising. How much have you guys raised and over how many rounds?
Yeah, so we raised about $3 million. It was an interesting time. So we had a kid, and my wife was pregnant with number two, and she's got an awesome job and like affords me the opportunity to be an entrepreneur. And Alex has a young child as well. And, you know, like previously been a banker and worked at Facebook, but had also done a couple startups, right? And so we made a decision that if you're building a global shipping company, you need to raise money. And so before we did much, we actually went out to raise a pre-seed round. And we were lucky because we were both multi-time founders. Alex had had a good exit. I'd had a bad exit, but an exit nonetheless. And like had worked long enough that our reputations were reasonable, right? For lack of a better term. And so we went out to raise a pre-seed. And what happened is everybody who's interested in the business, and the idea was like 500K, maybe 750, more than enough. Everybody who's interested would say, oh, my friend runs company X, or one of my portfolio companies is this brand, right? Mm-hmm. So what happened is we started to get introductions to all these sales opportunities, which started to fill up our pipeline. And some of those are a year later, right? Like today are actually coming to fruition. And some of those came to fruition immediately. And so basically we had a story of like, hey, there's all this pain. And like, if you think about cross-border shipping, like logistics is necessary, but insufficient. You really need a great experience, right? That digital experience, that customer experience. And then these, like, it's a logical story. It makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. And then all the investors saw, okay, like people are actually seriously interested in this. And, you know, they're not saying we're going to buy it today, but they're saying, hey, if these guys can build this product, we would definitely buy it. And so what happened is we immediately had an interest into raising a full seed round. Okay. And so we raised 750 on the pre-seed. And then like the next day we started the process, and it all kind of ran together, but for all intents and purposes, we raised another 2.25 ballpark. So in total, we raised about 3 million legally across two rounds. But as far as we're concerned, like, you know, we were building the business while we were doing this, but it was all kind of a compressed process.
So did you have a working prototype at the, I guess the pre-seed round, or was it?
Yeah. So we have, when we started the business, like, there's the demand side and the supply side, and we already had the supply side figured out. So we knew how to move parcels everywhere in the world from the US. Like, we already had those partnerships lined up. And then on the demand side, like, I had my old business and like had friends with other small businesses where we could start testing. And then we have a ton of leverage in our company. And the reason we were like, hey, if we can raise 500K, we're good for a while, is we have an incredible engineering team that's actually based in Russia. Oh. So Alex was born in Russia, speaks Russian. And, you know, 6 months after we started the company, we hired our now CTO, Tony. And Tony and Alex had worked on a previous business together. And Tony had managed this Russian engineering team. And so, like, it was basically get the band back together. And these guys are just absolutely stellar. But, you know, cost of living in Omsk, Russia is a little bit cheaper than San Francisco. So there's just, like, your money goes a lot further. You know, everybody's going to be an equity holder, et cetera. Like, it's not an outsource group. It's our team.
Cool.
We were literally off to the races from the beginning. It was pretty cool.
I do feel like there used to be, even just maybe 5 years ago, this almost requirement from investors that your engineering would be here in the Bay Area, and it seems to be less of a
much
thing,
less,
right?
So. Yeah. I think there's just distributed teams everywhere. We actually met with an investor, more just like a, hey, we're not fundraising now, but like, let's chat in 6 months sort of thing. But here's who we are, right? Just to like start building that relationship.
Yep.
And we used to like almost feel apologetic. It used to being a year ago, be like, hey, we this team in Russia. And like some people were pro and con. This guy was like, awesome. Like, we just moved on to the next discussion. Because he's like invested in huge companies, and he understands that like you need a major engineering team. If you need a major engineering team, and the like reasonably so, that the salary is 250K in one place or 50K in the other. Like, assuming you can manage it, and assuming you like have the infrastructure to do a good job, there's just so much leverage in building a team of distributed folks. And that goes for all roles, you know, as much as you can do it.
I totally agree. We have folks in Poland, Ukraine, some engineers over there, and they're amazing. They're so good.
Yeah.
Attentive, diligent, and, you know, just great code.
Yep.
And I love it. It's great. I don't know why you would do anything different if you can manage it. I think that's
That's right. I mean, it's still like you want to have a good culture. You want to have your team, right? Like, there's no point in doing it if you're like ruthless and nobody's happy. But if you can do it in the right way, you get to build well.
Okay, let's go back to the round. So how did you put this, who led the round, and how did you put the group of investors together? Maybe talk about the actual process.
So the pre-seed was The pre-seed kind of came together as a party round, and then we ended up getting a term sheet from Charles Hudson, a precursor, who's been an awesome partner all the way through. Like, we have monthly meetings with him, which is more than I've ever met with anybody who wasn't like a core part of my team previously. I think the same goes for Alex, my co-founder. And then our lead investor for the seed round is Resolute Ventures. Awesome investment firm. They are seed and pre-seed only. So there's like no mixed signaling. They help everybody go and get that A and that B. I think one of the companies in the fund just raised like $35 million, or it was announced yesterday. And you know, BarkBox is in there. There's some awesome brands in there. Greats is in there, like cool shoe company. Yeah. Anyway,
who's the partner over at Resolute? I know Charles. Yeah. He's a great guy. I've met
him. So they're two partners. Mm-hmm. Mike is in. I think he's in Boston. So Mike's on the East Coast, and then Renan, who's our partner, who brought us in, is in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how did you identify these folks and this, how did you identify the right people to go after?
Yeah. So Charles, I met once or twice previously, but more I knew a couple of founders in his portfolio who were just effusive in their praise for him. And that was previous. And you know, most everything I say, I'm probably saying I, and it's probably Alex or I. So, or like Alex as well, because we both went through NFX, and so we met those same folks. But like, just like everybody was effusive in their praise for Charles, both like amazing guy plus really helpful, right? And cares a lot about the founders. Renan, we actually got really lucky. We were introduced to him by one of our advisors. So one of the things we did when we started the company is we carved out a really big advisory pool. And like, normally it's risky to bring on advisors because it's somebody who you're like, oh, this person's going to bring me X, Y, and Z value. But like the reality is they don't really do that, and it's not clear what the expectations are. But we had like advisors from previous companies and like had a very strong network of folks who it's just like we get so much value by having them involved. Mm. One of our advisors is a guy, Ron McCavey, who I think he runs product and engineering now at Lyft. And Ron had known Renan socially. Ron was just a family friend. He used to manage my wife and previously. Mm-hmm. And so it was a warm intro there, and we were talking to a bunch of great firms, and they were the best fit. I mean, everything about our interactions with Renan, he's amazing business development, which is a core part of, you know, building our business. Mm-hmm. I did, I think, 6 or 7 calls with CEOs in his portfolio. He's like, nobody's ever done this many. And it was just like, just a ton of reference checking. Hey,
I was going to say,
What goes well when things are bad? What happens? How does he help? How do we get the most out of him? And like Mike and then Caroline, who works at Resolute as well. And like everybody I've never had like 100% thumbs up with, you know, no like, hey, it's good, except for, there was no except for. It was just everything was positive. And so was that. And then we did something really, I think we were really fortunate. And this is probably because Resolute was such a good partner, is we had our term sheet, and then we asked for, I think, 120 days after the round was like closed, and they'd wired in their money to go and fill the rest of the round.
Okay.
And so we were oversubscribed. So we knew we could fill up to the 3 million, right? Which is the number that we were getting to.
Yeah.
But what we didn't want to do is just take that next check and be done. Normally you want to, if you can be done with fundraising, be done, go build the business. But we raised more than enough at this point, and we wanted to be strategic about who we went and got. And so like we were proactive with trying to build a more diverse cap table. It was like Silicon Valley male to start and primarily white male. Right. And so it was like, let's go build a much more diverse cap table, which like, if you look at on our about page, you'll see some of our investors and advisors, and like, we're very proud of who's on the team. It was go find some strategic people who have not like shipping backgrounds, but have e-commerce and consumer brand backgrounds, so they can introduce us to prospective clients. Anyway, so we filled the round up that way and got really, really lucky.
Yeah, I saw you had like Sophia Amoroso.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. How'd you get to know her?
It was a warm intro from another one of our investors. You know, we fought really hard to bring her on, and it was great. So she's been great. Sam Yam, who's one of the co-founders of Patreon, has been extremely helpful, made some great introductions. Tommy Leap, who's just starting investing out of Jetstream, is great. I think he's also working at AngelList right now and helping. It's awesome. It's just like, it's a really nice group.
So let me see if I got that right. You had the round mostly filled, and then you asked for 120 days to basically go fill out an additional little chunk, or?
Yeah. So we had the round filled. Okay. And we had a firm that was willing to write, basically assume there was about 600K left in the round. And we had a firm that was willing to write that or more. And we had a couple other firms who were like, hey, if you go raise more, let me know. I want to write. So we were in this, I've never been in this place before. This isn't my standard. It felt incredibly fortunate, right? And we told the firm with 600K, we're like, we're not going to take 600K from you. We're going to go fill this and we'll let you have whatever's left. But about 150 is our goal. Mm-hmm. And so they knew that and they still wanted to be involved. And they were okay with that. And they understood like our strategy for that, which was hopefully to build a bigger company because we get better investors, better advisors, better everything. And I, you know, there's no way I would not have been able to do this with any other round that I'd raised, or I don't think Alex had ever experienced that either.
Yeah. If you have that luxury, that's great. And so when you're going to these kind of advisors / investors, is it, I guess what's sort of your, not your pitch about what you're pitching the business, but what's your sort of ask, or you know what I'm asking, like
when we're doing that last 120 days.
Yeah. What do you
it was as much flattery as possible. Like, hey, we are oversubscribed. Yeah. And we really want you to be an investor. And if you're interested at all, like ask us all the questions you want. We'll fly to you. You tell us how to work with you and we'd love to do it. And it was much more of a, you know, it's like when you're a student and you go and you talk to, you can go into any company and you can ask, even if you're like a graduate student, you're 45 and you're a grad student, you can still like go talk to the CEO of a random company because everybody wants to like help a student. Yeah. But this was like, hey, you're the expert. You have this great network. We really want to align with you. Like, tell us what it takes. If our minimum check is 25K and you only want to write 20, great. Like, just however we can get you involved in our company, I think we'll all win. And then, you know, not everybody obviously says yes, but we worked really hard. It was a very targeted approach.
Did you identify like, hey, we need experts in, I think you said like e-commerce or retail. I mean, you kind of identified categories?
Little bit. By that point, it was more who has a great reach into either recruiting. So like opens up a completely different candidate pool, right? Mm-hmm. Into press. So can make warm intros there, and primarily about BD. Like it was just, okay, we know we have something good. We've got like a pretty good sense of our product market fit, like where we belong.
Yeah.
Once we get to talk to the VP of operations at a consumer product brand, they go, oh yeah, I do not like shipping with the other guys. Let me ship with you. So.
Awesome. Cool. Intros, yeah. What are, kind of continuing in this vein, what are some tips or practices you do to leverage your advisors? Like how do you actively, great, you recruited them, you got them on board, they're on your cap table. Now what do you do with them?
So first of all, we keep everybody abreast of what's going on at the company. So we send a monthly update, good, bad, and different. Like we update everybody on where we are. At the top of the update, before anything else, like right below our mission and like the main metrics is how you can help us. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know somebody at this company? We're hiring for this role, right? Like anything like that, which is helpful. So it's very clear what our ask is. We schedule calls with the few people who we gave advisory shares to who aren't investors. Like we're very proactive because the answer is like, if you aren't going to do the work, like you signed a contract to get those advisory shares. So one guy actually hasn't done anything and like he's fallen off as an advisor. Mm. So it's not like we gave him a grant. It's a grant over 2 years.
Yeah.
Investing monthly. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, that's okay. It's just not his priority and that's fine. Right. That's bound to happen. But I think it's more about being intentional.
Yeah. And just for anyone, because I think this is interesting, might be a good strategy, brothers. For folks maybe not familiar, basically these advisors, you gave them a grant of, can you give a range of what common sort of shares. Stock?
Yeah. So for the most part, you do a tenth of a point to a quarter of a point.
Okay. Vested over 2 years.
Yeah. And, monthly, like in immediate vesting.
Yep.
And you ideally, you don't do that for somebody unless they've already spent 6 months helping you pro bono. The idea you don't want, if you go and you proactively go get in it. So we were proactively going to get investors at that point, just to be clear. But if you say, oh, I really want like Heather, who's like the best shipping person I know and works at whatever XYZ company. And you go to Heather and like, she hasn't helped you. You don't really know her. She hasn't done anything. Like hopefully she'll be incredible. But the reality is like what you really care about are the people who are going to be with you day in, day out, who are going to like see an article and forward it to you and be like, Nathan, you've got to go check this out. Let me make these intros.
Right.
And then you want to almost like, it sounds weird, but like reward those people and say, listen, I'm incredibly grateful for your help. I want to make you a formal advisor.
Mm, yeah. So
there's one guy who actually, we did that where we weren't even thinking about it, but his name's Brendan Baker. He actually runs a co-working space among other things that I work out of called Fabric.
Okay. Uh-huh.
It's awesome. It's right at Civic Center. It's like, It's like a co-working space with like a really deep community feel. It's Thursday today, and every Thursday we have a community lunch, which is pretty great.
Oh, cool.
And so Brendan helped us tell our story and helped us with the fundraise. And he didn't make a bunch of intros, but he helped us narrow in our story. And he called BS when we were full of it. And he just really, really refined it. And he put in time. And if we'd asked him for 10x more time, I have no doubt he would have, you know, put aside whatever to go help. I think the right way to do advisors is to find those people who are like deeply embedded and are helping, and then almost reward them.
Yeah.
For Alex and I, we'd actually had history with a lot of people. So one of his old advisors is this guy named Hap Klopp, who's a professor, but also was like the founder of the North Face. And Hap has been incredible. Oh, so Alex knew that. Like, I didn't need to go meet and interview Hap and get free help for 6 months. One of my buddies, Bhavin Parikh, is the CEO of a company called Magoosh. It's an ed tech company. If you want to go get like GRE, like any testing, like awesome, awesome business. And he'd helped me for 5 years at my previous company. And so I was like, yeah, this guy is just an incredible CEO. We'd be lucky to have his time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good, good. Okay, great. Any other, how many investors did you talk to when you were raising the round? Did you cast a wider net, or was it pretty focused?
Yeah, we cast an extremely wide net, and we got a lot better as we went through the process. I don't even know. I have a list of 250. So we either talked to or emailed with, called that many.
Yeah.
That we had in person or phone calls with at least 150 or 180.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think that's right. Probably 150.
Yeah. No, that's good to know. I think that's one thing founders need to hear, is that actually does take a lot of,
it's frustrating. Like we got down to like diligence and like real depth with 5 firms.
Okay.
2 just went completely dark, and we never heard from them again. And like that feeling is awful as a founder. And like, it happens. And incentives aren't aligned, or, you know, like it's just not, once you've decided, no, it's not worth your time to like spend another minute on it. If you've got 1,000 other deals you can look at. And so at the end of the day, like building a real process and having a lot of numbers means it's a forcing function to practice and to get your story right and to take away regret. Cause if you talk to 20 and 2 are interested, and then, you know, one's kid is sick, so can't come into the meeting that day and advocate for you, like you might lose that deal, and you know, whatever happens with the other one happens.
Yeah.
And so, but if you have 100 and there's still no interest, like you're either A, not refining your story from pitch to pitch and like figuring out what the real gaps are in your business, or maybe it's just not the right time to raise, or it's not a venture fundable business. And like neither of those like kind of latter two are bad. It's just, it is what it is sometimes.
Yeah. Brigan, I saw that, so a couple other interesting folks around the cap table. I believe this is public knowledge. It's on PitchBook.
No, it's fine.
Like Ryan Hoover and April Underwood and Kleiner. Yeah. I guess Kleiner took a little sliver.
Yeah, Kleiner took a small piece. It was I know one of their new investors more on a personal level, and he is awesome at logistics. And so it was kind of when you're raising a seed round, you really don't want to take money from an A investor, because if they don't lead an A round, it can be a quote unquote negative signal. But like for us, it was worth the risk, because like we're not expecting them to lead an A round. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but it's not like, you know, it is what it is if it happens or doesn't. But getting them in early gave us the same thing, which is like awesome advice from Ilya, who's a partner there.
Okay.
Warm intros to a bunch of brands in the Kleiner portfolio, which is obviously a reaching portfolio.
Yeah.
And so it was like, it was worth the downside. Like at the end of the day, if we're not building a good enough business that people don't want to invest in, like, there's no gamesmanship that matters. It's like, we thought they gave us a better chance. And then Ryan has been incredible. So Ryan's a founder of Product Hunt, super helpful every time there's been an ask. And like, he's doing 1,000 things and he's always responsive. Same with April. Like, we just met up with her 2 weeks ago, at her office, which is pretty cool. I mean, she's the chief product officer for Slack, which is a massive company, and like still puts in time. I think that's the thing, is like having a name is one thing, but like, I'd rather somebody who has no name, but is incredibly useful. And we just got really fortunate that we have people who both like had extremely successful careers and are like generous with their time and with their introductions.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I know we have about 2 minutes left.
So, sure.
Any other just tips of advice, things we haven't covered, things you would do differently if you were fundraising all over again?
I think I'm reflecting back on like having raised for my first business, and I think, I believe so much in the business that I postured a lot in investor meetings and in investor discussions. I hear, oh yeah, we're going to get you a term sheet next week. And I then go tell other investors, hey, we're expecting a term sheet next week, so we should chat now. And then when next week that term sheet doesn't happen, either because the fund fell off or they're delayed or whatever, you then have egg on your face. And I think one of the big things, and Alex has been an incredible influence for me on this, is just like, just surprise people. And then like, if they don't get a chance to participate because they missed the window or it just doesn't work for whatever reason, you know, that's okay. So I think like, the success on fundraising is like a really, really robust process. Go out, talk to a bunch, like refine your story every time. A small thing, which is maybe useful, maybe not, but like every time we get a question from an investor, we create a slide for our appendix that answers that question. And then like you maybe have a 10 slide deck and an 80 slide appendix, and you may never open up the appendix, but at least if an investor asks, hey, you go, oh, let me come back to that later. I've got a slide for that. Right.
Yep.
You show that you're that expert. So you have that process, you refine your story, and you just like let the cards fall as they may, right? Like bring everybody together.
Yep.
You know, hopefully you're building the right business and you can excite people and inspire them.
That's awesome. Okay, great. I'm taking lots of notes. That's why I'm looking down. Awesome. Okay. So in 1 minute or less, because I know you got a hard stop.
Great.
What, if people want to learn more, what's your, the best way to find out? Just passport.com.
So our website is passportshipping.com. Microsoft owns passport.com. So
of course, yes.
That one. I'm sure it was some product a while ago. It redirects to Bing, which is pretty cool. So we're passportshipping.com. And I know you asked, like, do we have any ask or anything to promote? Like, at the end of the day, all we're really looking for is introductions to brands that have fans outside of the US. So effectively, like any consumer brand that has, you know, an Instagram presence will have fans from all over the world. And like, they're leaving so much money on the table just by not interacting with that international audience, because like until now, international shipping has just been a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So if, you know, just warm intros to brands, that's all we care about. Cause like, we think we can help them and there's no hard sale. There's no long-term contracts. It's like, hey, this is what we do. We could, like, would love to pilot with you and go. If anybody has any questions, is Aaron, A-A-R-O-N at passportshipping.com.
All right. That's great. Now, we do have a decent international audience, I think, on this. So who knows what could happen. I'd love to see something come of it.
This is awesome. Really fun.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much. This is great. Good luck. So hopefully I'm not giving away, but you say you have a investor meeting in 20 minutes. So
this is a warm intro. This is like, okay. This is in 6 or 9 months. I mean, you know, the random tip that you asked for is like, you know, Mark Suster wrote a blog post a couple of years ago called, maybe 10 years ago, who knows, called Lines, Not Dots. And the idea is like, give people data points to understand is what's the trend of the company. And so we're just meeting this investor who in a year or two, it might be useful. I also advise a bunch of companies, like I can make intros to him for them, and you know, who knows what'll happen, but just a good conversation, and he'll teach us about our business too.
Good. Awesome. Yeah. Well, enjoy it. Good luck. And we'll catch you after your next round.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Thanks, this is great.
Bye.